Welcome to my dojo. This is Drunken Fist Happy Hour, a special edition of Kung Fu Pizza Party, where for the very first time I'm doing this this special edition of the show, I am taking that 30 minutes or less stipulation and I'm putting it over here. We're putting it off to the side. I'm grabbing a drink. I'm grabbing a friend. And we're just gonna talk. We're gonna see where the conversation leads us. It's just gonna be a meandering, just like Drunken Fist Kung Fu. It's just gonna be a big meandering, great time, and just seeing where the conversation leads us. And for this very first edition of the show, I brought back the long-awaited return is over, folks. Making his return to the dojo, Mr. Mark Flower. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure to be on the show.
It is so good to have you, a guy who is not only knowledgeable when it comes to this kind of food and beverage stuff, but a guy who's passionate about bringing people together. This, you know, Mark's show is called Grub and Grace. This whole focus is bringing people together over the table versus finding more ways to divide over issues. And so I feel like this is a great place for us today because we're going to be bringing a lot of things to the table today. Back in April, when Mark was on the show, we were pairing up pizza with different martial art movies, series, actors. Today, pretty similar idea, but we have props this time. We have beer. We have actual beer with us here today. We're going to drink. We're going to talk about the beer. We're going to pair these up with some movies as well, because we just had so much fun with it last time. And I guess you've already started, right?
I haven't actually cracked it open yet. So I don't know. Do you want me to go ahead and do that? Get that sound in there?
Yeah, let's get that ASMR. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
All right. I'm already realizing that next time I got to plan for like some bar snacks on the side to have some like mozzarella sticks or pretzels or something.
That would have been a great idea, actually.
I'm just now realizing that.
You know, we could do a whole like episode based on bar snacks or like, you know, side snacks for drinking. Because I mean, different cultures have different ones. I mean, here in America, you have like pretzels and nuts and everything like that. But then in other countries, sure, like Korea, they have like very specific drinking foods to go with like soju and different beers and everything like that. So that might be a great episode all on its own.
It makes sense that other cultures would have that. I just don't know what that would be. And I appreciate finally having in my life a foodie, somebody who like is very well acquainted with other cultures' foods. My son, producer Cooper, just to kind of show you how well I'm doing as a parent, refers to every Mexican place as Taco Bell. So, you know, we're working on, you know, understanding that not everything is Taco Bell, even if it is a quesadilla. But let's talk. I'm so excited as a beer person. I'm very excited, Mark. This was the comment I'm saving. We're in two very different areas. And so I know you're going to have stuff that I can't get unless I'm willing to pay too much money for shipping. And I might have some things here that you're interested in as well. And so that part, just as a beer person, excites me. Can you go ahead and tell me what are you starting off there with?
So I'm starting off with Horse and Dragon Sad Panda Coffee Stout. This is local to Fort Collins in Colorado here. So I picked that one up. I do have a few other ones, but if you want to maybe go and start with what you're starting on first, and then we can talk about the rest.
So I have you can see the logo there, from Pipeworks Brewing in Chicago, Ninja versus unicorn. Nice. And Pipeworks, this was the easiest martial art related beer for me to get my hands on. The only one mm-hmm. that Pipeworks makes, but this is not the only unicorn related beer that Pipeworks makes. They have at least one other, and I think some of their like variants are unicorn related as well. But yeah, it's a, you said yours is a coffee stout, right?
I love stouts. Yeah.
Oh, dude, that is my go-to. This is a double IPA, which the sad irony is four of my five beers here are IPAs, and mm-hmm. that is not my go-to. I've never have gotten into the IPA, but that's what I was able to find. I would much rather have a coffee stout.
You know, you and I both, I've never really been a big IPA person, although there are some IPAs that really surprise me, especially like fruited IPAs. Even some like double or even triple IPAs can actually taste okay to me. But just a standard IPA, something about it just doesn't sit well with me.
The other beer that I have here, that's not an IPA. This has been like the style of choice for me this year. I don't know what it's been, but I have been all about the sour and tart beers. I've been really into that style lately this year. And I've come to realize that when I have those kinds, when I have a sour, I want to get punched in the face. Like I want this to be sour, candy. Just like if I don't get that hit afterwards, do it again. Try again next time, friend. So that has been like my go-to, but I agree, like stouts, coffee stouts. Do you get Founders out there?
Founders. I feel like I've seen Founders before, but I can't remember if I've actually had any Founders before.
So they're out of Michigan. I don't have any of them here with me now, but Michigan puts out some great beer, and Founders is near the top of that list. They have a breakfast stout that tastes like chocolate covered espresso beans. It is so
That sounds delicious.
Good. It is so good. It's like drinking candy. And you immediately fall asleep afterwards. But
man, I knew that we really connected well. And I definitely before this episode, before we knew like our taste in beers, because you're talking about sours and I am all about sours. Like the past few years, something about sours have just really been just hitting just a good spot in me. And, you know, obviously the stouts and everything, and then your view on IPAs as well. You know, we're clicking here.
We're clicking. So the beer you have there, it's called Mad Panda, Bad Panda. What was it?
Sad Panda. So this isn't necessarily like a Kung Fu related, but I mean, it's, you know, Kung Fu Panda is kind of relating to that.
Totally.
You know, I this is one of my favorite beers here in Colorado. It's this coffee stout has a nice, very well-rounded flavor. It's not too strong on the coffee, but it's not too strong on the stout. It's a nice blend of the two. And it doesn't feel overbearing. Like some stouts can feel very heavy and overbearing, but this one just feels like a nice, like you can sip on it and it's good. But let me tell you about another one. So,
sure, go ahead.
This one here, right here, it's called the Big Bad Baptist.
I've had some of those before. Yeah.
This one is ridiculous. Okay. So, let me read this. So it's an imperial stout. So it's a stout with cocoa nibs and coffee added with aged in whiskey barrels. It feels like it has four different flavors all mashed into one. So when you drink it, you taste all four flavors and it's like they're all competing for dominance in your mouth. It feels like a you know, chaotic dojo in your mouth. Everything's punching you in your taste buds. But I got to say, once you let it, like you take a couple sips and you let it kind of sit for a little bit, you start to taste kind of more of that cocoa nib. And it actually has a nice just kind of finish and sit in you know, in your bean. And honestly, I was craving chocolate after I drank this thing. But man, this thing is 11.8%. And I felt good the whole rest of the evening after this. This is one ridiculous beer.
I found a blueberry one of Big Bad Ooh, Baptist okay. once. And same kind of thing, just like a lot of different things going on there, but the blueberry was kind of like what sits with you the most at the end. I had one once. Oh my gosh. An example of this done poorly. Okay. Couple winters ago, this may have been almost like 10 years ago now, Guinness partnered with somebody and released during like the Christmas season, a barrel aged Guinness that was mint flavored. And that was it. I wanted to like it because I love Guinness. I love Guinness. But there was something about the mint and the barrel aged that just like it was two sharp flavors competing against each other. So it just did not work at all. Those barrel ages, my experience with barrel age is that it is either amazing or just like that barrel sharpness just derails the whole thing.
See, I feel like mint might actually taste really good with like a sour, because there's certain sours that actually taste more like a mixed drink as opposed to a beer. Of That's course, true. You know, they get the process of making beer is very similar to other beers. It's not, of course, a mixed drink, but the flavor can actually come off kind of like a subtle mixed drink. And I feel like a mint could actually be really good in one of those sours.
That's true. You do like a beer take on a mojito, throw some like mint and some other like a more refreshing flavor to it, but then add like a sour at the end. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that working, and I would definitely want that more than like a canned mojito. I've yet to find any of those like canned cocktails that work well for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to suggest some of these ideas to some of my friends that actually, you know, brew their own beer and everything. I've actually one of the guests that I've had on my show, he brews his own beer. I have another good friend that brews his own beer. So maybe I'll have to suggest that. But I don't think they actually brew sours. They usually do like IPAs and ales and those type of things. Yeah.
I was out at my sister-in-law's this past July, and she's out in Pennsylvania. I'm in Northwest Indiana. She's out in Pennsylvania. And there's this really nice brewery there. If I could get all of my beer friends together and go visit there sometime, I would love to. It's called Cobble House at the Falls. So there's like an indoor seating area where you order, but then you can go outside. There's like hiking trails. There's a natural waterfall there. And so not only there's like outdoor activities like axe throwing and games like that. So not only is the environment just like so like pristine and so just like relaxing, the beer is fantastic. I've yet to have a bad one there. This past summer or this past July when I went, they had a barrel-aged Scottish ale. That was fine drinking right there.
There's something really nice about having environment with the beverage or food that you're eating as well. I mean, obviously in Colorado, there's a lot of that. You know, Colorado is known for a lot of the breweries that we have, but we also have a lot of that scenery and environment as well. And especially when you go out to like Breckenridge or some of these other know, mountain towns, they have their own breweries, but then you get a lot of that environment with it. So I can totally like feel kind of what you're explaining as far as like having the riverfront and the axe throwing and just the, you know, you hear the nature, you see the nature, you feel it. It just adds to the experience of being social with other people, having a beverage, eating pizza, or, you know, hot dog, whatever you want to eat out there. And there's just something so nice and serene about having kind of that full kind of environmental picture.
Yeah. And I don't get that a lot. I'm in Northwest Indiana. It's about as suburban as it gets out here. Gary, Indiana is right around the corner. Chicago's about 30 minutes away. So it's either like industrial big city or urban environment. And when it comes to nature, we have the dunes. I'm not far from Lake Michigan. But that, yes, we do have sand hills. That's what dunes are. They're big sand hills. But that kind of more like in the mountains environment, or even just like the waterfall, the, all of that, you have to go pretty far out of my area to get like even just hills to drive on. It's pretty flat out here. So any opportunity that I could get to be in a more like a brewery or like a dining experience that's a little bit more like among nature is very appealing to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing I really know about Gary, Indiana comes from Team America. So I don't really know too much about Gary, Indiana. But there's something about like, if you have, let's say you're talking about beer. Let's say you have a nice beer in some very nice location like Pennsylvania, like you're talking about that brewery. If you were to bring mm-hmm. that beer back and have that, there's something unconscious or subconsciously about having something that is familiar that once you, let's say you drink that beer back in Indiana, it might bring some of those memories and those feelings kind of flooding back into, you know, the mental space. So, you know, you can find little ways to have your paradise within an environment that you don't really think is, you know, bringing that, you know, per se, but, you know, there are ways to kind of find your way into bringing that paradise back to where you are at the moment. So, you know, if you were able to, you know, purchase and have that beer shipped to you, you might be able to find a little paradise within your space right now.
That is true. That is true. I don't remember if they actually bottle to go though. Next time I go out there, which will be November, I'll have to see if they at least do like growlers, howlers, things like that. Just that way I can like have something maybe over the mm-hmm. holidays back home.
Yeah.
This actually sets up well the other one I have here, one of the other ones I have here that is not. This is the it's a tart. It's not a sour. It's a tart. This tarts is from are so good. Yeah, they are. Urban Artifact. It's called Chime. I had never had one of these. As far as I know, I had never had one from Urban Artifact before. Mm-hmm. It caught my attention. It's a orange cream tart. So kind of like kind of like an orange dreamsicle with a bit of like a bit of a sour kick to it at the end. I grabbed it for this because it's got a monk on it.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, monks. Uh-huh. That's in martial art movies.
Yeah.
Maybe this would be a good one. This would be a good one. Maybe if you're watching like Bulletproof Monk with Chow Yun-Fat, you know, something.
Yeah.
Something just kind of easy drinking while you watch like a fun movie. Same with this ninja versus mm-hmm. unicorn. I'm
so
going team.
Okay, so
yeah,
what would you
go ahead?
Movies
go ahead.
Would you pair up with your ninja versus unicorn one? Because would you try to find something with like unicorns in it, or would you? How would you pair that one up?
So you can't. It's not that hard to find martial art movies with the unicorns in it. Really? I'm gonna go. Yeah, I'm going to go Team Ninja, and I'm going to mm-hmm. pick a movie that makes the millennial brothers go, hell yeah. Ninja Assassin, starring Rain.
Ooh. Okay.
That is a good one.
Yeah, Rain, the Korean actor, right?
Correct, yeah. Yes, that was 2010s, kind of around that time. I think it's the only movie that guy did. But
I think so.
Man, that movie is just fun, violent, but fun.
Very fun.
So there was back in the 70s on the unicorn side of things, there was an actor who his name translated into English was Unicorn Lee. That is his name. And he stars in a movie called Fist of the Unicorn. That is an actual movie. I've seen it. It's fine. But one of the reasons why it kind of has like a cult status in Kung Fu movie history is because the fight choreographer on it was Bruce Lee, and it was one of the movies he did right before his death.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Weird, man. So, yeah, it's one of those, like, it sticks out like a sore thumb when you go on Wikipedia and look at Bruce Lee's, like, filmography. It kind of sticks out weird because, you know, a movie called Fist of the Unicorn is something you would not expect Bruce Lee to have done.
Yeah.
But I think one of the big reasons why he was involved is because, if I remember right, this Unicorn Lee, who is in the movie, he was like longtime friends with Bruce. And so he just like worked with him on this specific project. So yeah, you can actually find, if I remember right, the last time you were on the show, you talked about briefly Intimate Confessions of a Chinese Courtesan.
Yeah.
Unicorn Lee has a role in that movie.
No way. I guess I just don't know who Unicorn Lee is. Otherwise, I probably would have picked that up.
Yeah. Like, I mean, outside of those two movies, there's not really anything that's going to be. So that's really going to stand out. And those two movies are very much like, you have to be in the know to kind of be aware of what those are anyway. So, like, it doesn't surprise me that you weren't like, that's stuntman Unicorn Lee in this scene. Look at that. Like, it doesn't surprise me that you didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, I guess maybe I'll jump in here. I mean, obviously, Sad Panda. It's, you know, Kung Fu Panda. I think that's kind of a given at this point. I was trying to think of like what my favorite Kung Fu Panda movie is. I can say for sure that number 4, the most recent one, I wasn't a big fan of that one, but I can't remember like exactly what happens in 2 and 3. I remember number 2, that was the one where was it all the ships and he's deflecting all the cannonballs back?
Yeah, I think so. And you get to meet like previous members of the Furious Five, I think.
Yeah. And then number 3 was where he meets his family and they kind of help defeat. Okay. I think they're all good. They're all good. I mean,
it's a fun. Yeah. Clearly DreamWorks hit on something with that one because it 4 movies, spinoff stuff, like it really worked for them.
And you can't really go bad with Jack Black either. I mean, Jack Black is just, he's going to remain just king. Just as long as he's alive, he's always going to come out with some good stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the day when I can review Nacho Libre for this show. Ooh. Like it has to happen at some point. I love how Jack Black is kind of this like either you love him or you hate him kind of guy. Like there's no middle ground when it comes to Jack Black. There's no like casual fans.
No.
But yeah, I might have to turn like a whole year into just like all things Kung Fu Panda, and then maybe that's how I shove Nacho Libre into this.
Yeah.
What are you going to watch while you're drinking Big Bad Baptist?
So I was thinking about this one and I was like, okay, I gotta find, since it's like Big Bad Baptist, like how can I pair a Kung Fu movie to this one? So I was looking up, okay, is there like Jesus, like, you know, religious type of figures within you know, Kung Fu films? And there actually surprisingly are. And there's one film in particular. And now I have a whole list of films and I didn't actually put notes next to them. And so I haven't watched a lot of these, but I was looking up ones that had stuff like this. Maybe I put it on my list to actually watch it later, but I'm pretty sure. Okay. I think the film I'm thinking about is called Da Di Long Zong. I don't know Chinese, so I don't know exactly how to spell it. It's Da Di Long Zong. Fury in the Storm. I think that's the one. I'll have to look up the trailer again, but there's a scene where there's this like Jesuit like priest or something like that carrying a large cross and he's running away from like Kung Fu masters with swords that are like chasing him, and he's like fighting him with the cross over his shoulder. He's like bumping him off cliffs and everything, and then he's just like running along this cliffside, and that's the only clip that I've been able to find of it online. So I have no idea. It's just such a bizarre little thing that was thrown in there. I was looking up some people were talking about, they're like, this person was like there's this film back in the 70s that they used to play, and I saw it one time, and where like there was this, you know, chase scene, and then all of a sudden this like Jesus looking figure with a cross over his shoulder comes out of nowhere and starts like running around and is like converts somebody or something. I'm like, what the heck is he talking about? So I looked up this film, and this is the one I found, was the Dadi Long Song. I'm pretty sure that's the one that I found. But yeah, I found a clip about it, and maybe I'll just have to send it to you later, but it's just so bizarre looking.
Well, by the time this episode comes out, I would have reviewed When Taekwondo Strikes, which also has maybe not necessarily a Christ figure, but like the whole first third of the movie takes place in a church. Nobody is fighting each other with crosses, but Mark, they do that thing that all of us church kids wanted to do and never got to. They're like running across the tops of the church pews and like fighting each other while balancing on the church pews, and it's everything we always wanted to do but never got to do. I at least always wanted to run across the top of church pews. I thought that was so cool. But yeah, send me, if you are able to find that one, send it to me. That can be a great weird Easter movie that I could review for the show.
I'm going to top you off with this one, actually. So I'm going to pair it with this other one here. This is a by Duclaw Brewing Company. It's called Sweet Baby Jesus. It's a chocolate peanut butter porter. It looks delicious. I haven't had this one yet. But I was looking up for like, you know, Jesus related movies with Kung Fu and everything like that. I found this one called, and I don't know if you've heard about this one, it's called Legend of the Liquid Sword. And it came out in 1993. There's a scene in it where Jesus Christ comes down on the cross, and he's all, you know, arms out, and they're all speaking in Chinese, and they're all like, you know, get out of the way. And he's like, no, I'm going to fight you. And all of a sudden they start fighting like Kung Fu and start punching each other and everything. And it's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. So I looked up the summary of the film, the synopsis. Apparently they fight like Batman and stuff like this. Like, it's just such a bizarre film. I can't find this film anywhere. I think there are some on Amazon that you can purchase. But it wouldn't come until after this episode. So I was like, maybe I'll think about getting that one, but I can't find it for streaming anywhere online. So I can't even find those like cheap websites, you know, where you get like viruses and everything. Sure. There's nothing like that even. So
there is a movie that came out after Bruce Lee died called Bruce Lee Fights Back from the Grave. And it's a guy playing Bruce Lee, and he's in hell, and he has to fight his way out of hell. And throughout the movie, he's fighting like the Godfather and Lucifer and like Darth Vader and like other like American movie villains from like the 70s time period. I don't know. I can't put myself in the headspace of how that was a good idea. Of one, making a movie with
like. It almost makes me think of the game Earthbound, where, you know, like you get this like Japanese developer, but he makes it very like American. Like, he brings all these like American pop culture things into it, like the Blues Brothers and everything. And it makes me think like how much of American culture do they actually understand being in Japan? And it could have been that he lived in America and actually understands it. But like games like that, where it's like, you know, you just bring in all these pop culture references, like Lucifer, Satan, like Darth Vader, and like all these different things, and just throw it in the box and just kind of see what happens.
Yeah. It's very much like when you're a kid and you just have like a box of random action figures, and Batman is fighting Leonardo from the Ninja Turtles. And then here comes G.I. Joe, and just like melee the whole time. speaking of faith for a moment.
Yeah.
You know John 3:16, right? You're familiar with that one?
I would hope so, yeah.
How about Austin 3:16? Are you familiar with Austin 3:16?
Steve Austin, yeah.
So for those of you who aren't watching the video version of this, Stone Cold Steve Austin of WWE fame partnered with, I apologize, El Segundo Brewing Company, I believe they're also in Texas, to make a line of beers called Broken Skull. I've had the lager before. This one is a double IPA, and it kind of just tastes like an IPA, or like a double IPA. I do think there is a lot of irony in the fact that every Monday night in the 90s, Stone Cold was out there chugging gallons of Budweiser, and now he has partnered with a craft brewing company to make this is so I got this on sale. It was on sale post 4th of July. One of those, it was a 4-pack for $5, but like regular price, this is like a $12 to $15 4-pack. There ain't no way. There ain't no way Stone Cold was drinking like $6 to $7 beers in between matches. Like, that's not happening. But I, like I said, the double IPA, it kind of tastes like your standard IPA, double IPA, that is. The lager isn't too bad. It is, it's exactly what I would want. It's just crisp and refreshing. That's all I want when it comes to lagers. Just something that, you know, I'm a dad, you're a dad. I want that dad beer every once in a while. I just want that. I mowed the lawn. Let me just have something nice and crisp. When it comes to movies, obviously Stone Cold, one, never did a kung fu film, and two, never should have gotten into acting. He's a terrible actor. But in the early 2000s, he did do a movie called Damage, which is one of the many prison, no holds barred films from that time period. So that seems appropriate. That seems appropriate if you're drinking.
It's fighting.
Steve Austin.
It doesn't have to be all martial arts and kung fu. Fighting.
Right. You know, I think if you're not bashing two Budweisers together, like, crack this open. You know, this is so sophisticated. I'm not watching WrestleMania X7 while drinking this. So I don't
know. There were times where I wondered how much of the beer actually got into Steve Austin's mouth, because he would crack them together and then he would just kind of hold it above his head and just let it drip down. But obviously,
go everywhere.
Just probably got over his body. So I'm wondering how much he actually drank when he did.
Right. Did you watch wrestling? Do you watch wrestling? I'm curious.
I did a little bit. You know, when it hit its like heyday back in the, you know, the late 90s and everything like that.
Okay.
You know, with you know, like Steve Austin and like, you know, the Undertaker and everyone like that, and The Rock. But I kind of fell out. I stopped watching it shortly after that. Okay. I think, you know, finished up high school, college, and I was like, you know, just didn't appeal to me anymore after that.
Gotcha. Okay. I, up until very recently, I was a longtime pro wrestling fan. I still go to like local shows. I did go to one recently that I don't know if you remember Al Snow. He was there, and James Storm from TNA, he was there as well. But like watching WWE or AEW, like, I don't know. I mean, as a stay-at-home dad, most of my day is spent watching Paw Patrol anyway, so I just don't have the time really to keep up with all the wrestling anymore. But
yeah.
But I was curious, because it seems like everybody at some point had a brief like wrestling phase, even if it was just like a couple years. Everybody seems to know Randy Orton, Rey Mysterio, Stone Cold Steve Austin, obviously The Rock.
Yeah, actually, one of our my brother had a friend, and his father actually worked for the WWF when it was back in WWF.
Okay.
Like the NWO and everything like that. So he used to work kind of behind the scenes with a lot of that. So he was never on camera or anything, obviously, but
gotcha. Okay.
But I forget exactly what he did, but yeah, he would talk about that, you know, he worked there and everything like that. So I thought that was kind of cool. And so my brother got into wrestling, you know, really big, you know, just around that age. And then obviously my older brother watching wrestling. I enjoyed watching a little bit, you know, because I want to be like my big brother. I want to do what he's doing. And so I did that a little bit. So that's kind of how I got into that whole scene.
Nice. Yeah, I remember wrestling with my dad during the commercials of like WCW Nitro and WWF Raw, Monday Night Raw, like when I was a little kid. I remember doing that. It's a conversation for another day. It's a weird, controversial world for sure. The pro wrestling world, that is. I'm hoping at some point to do that Netflix documentary series, Mr. McMahon, that kind of goes through like, this is how terrible of a person Vince McMahon was. Which, here's the thing, just as a quick side, as a longtime wrestling fan, as somebody who watched a lot of WWE throughout my life, the extent that Vince McMahon was a horrible person, I think the extent is very surprising. But the fact that when the news started breaking that he is a terrible person, and like the rest of the world is kind of freaking out about it, as a wrestling fan, it was like, why are you all so surprised? Like, this is, we all knew that he was a bad guy and that there was going to be more skeletons in the closet. Like, what are you, again, the extent of how bad of a person he was is kind of like, wow, some of this was actually surprising. But just the idea that he was the guy was friends with Donald Trump. What do you expect? Like,
yeah, I didn't, when like watching wrestling, I didn't think too much about him being a terrible person, but knowing things have come out and everything, I've never been surprised. I've always thought the world of wrestling is, you know, there's always going to be skeletons in the closet and there's always going to be stuff like that. And I'm glad things come out. I'm always glad for transparency and things to make light when it's hurting people. So, but yeah, I wasn't surprised. Not in the least.
Yeah, the Vice TV series Dark Side of the Ring is really good too. For those of you out there who love true crime and this whole the shocking world of professional wrestling, you wouldn't think fake fighting would be so controversial, but it is. There's been a lot of very bad, shady things that has happened, and Dark Side of the Ring does a really good job of presenting like a kind of like a neutral third party. Like, here are the facts, here's the information, versus don't watch a WWE paper, don't watch WWE documentaries, because victory is written by the winners, and it is just propaganda for them.
From you just got to follow the money. Who's actually funding the documentary itself? Yeah. So yeah, because then you'll start to understand the bias, and that goes true with any documentaries. It doesn't matter if it's about wrestling or if it's about, you know, whoever. You know, look at who's actually funding the documentary, where the money is coming from, and you'll start to see, you know, what side of the story that is going to be told. So yeah,
for sure. I wanted to ask you a question, Mark. I'm going to circle back to this one with the monk on it. I forgot. I wanted to ask you a question about this monk one.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're a little bit older than me, but I imagine you may remember this. Do you remember that time period when Christians were really into the idea of visiting monasteries? Do you remember that? Like, that was like a whole thing there in like the 2010s where it was like really cool to go visit a monastery.
I must have been out of the loop, or maybe my like community of faith believers didn't really do that. I think right around the time I was getting, you know, I think it was a couple years out of college and everything like that. I was kind of, I don't think I was really paying too much attention as far as like what the news was talking about, what certain, you know, faith communities were, you know, the swing of things and what was popular, what was not, what was like, you know, the hot thing to do.
Okay.
So I think I may have missed that, but I do remember while I was at my university, so I went to a Christian university and over in Springfield, Missouri, pretty sizable one there. And they, because it was sizable, it's kind of like a liberal arts religious university, and they, there were certain classes that actually encourage you to go out to different places of worship from different faith beliefs and religious backgrounds and everything like that, to kind of give you like a better, you know, well-rounded picture of outside of your own bubble and everything like that. So I do remember some people going to temples, monasteries, and that sort of thing. So within that circle and that community that I was a part of, I remember we were doing that, but it was more of like a class assignment as opposed to just something that people wanted to do.
Gotcha. Yeah, that was like, I remember this happening, and I read about it in a book by Andrew Peterson about when he went and did it, but this was like a thing there in the 2010s, kind of during this renaissance of interest in monks, monasteries, the Desert Fathers, when it comes to like Christian mysticism, to go visit a monastery. Being a younger millennial, like that wasn't a option for me to go do because my parents weren't going to drive me to one. But I do remember, I do remember that happening. Have you ever been to a, I've still yet to like even visit a monastery of either Christian faith or otherwise. Cause again, this is a Shaolin monk on the can of this beer, but have you ever, I've never gotten to visit one. Have you at any time been able to visit one?
I've tried to make it a point to visit at least once to various, you know, places of worship for various religious backgrounds. So I think the one that I haven't been to, like a faith or religion that I really want to visit, like a place of worship, is to go to like a Jewish temple. I haven't been to a Jewish temple yet. And I think that's something I would really love to experience. I've been to, monasteries, temples, not all the time during a, like a religious ceremony or anything like that, or any like worship time or anything like that. But at least, you know, visiting and you know, checking the place out and just all that. I've visited like Southeast Asia. So I've been in plenty like, you know, like temples over there. Obviously a lot of the, you know, the touristy temples, but you know, sometimes you just wander into to random temples here and there and places of worship. And usually there's somebody in there, you know, on their, you know, hands and knees, head down, you know, praying to, you know, the God that they worship. And so it's a kind of a cool experience, and it kind of, you know, broadens your scope as far as like, you know, the different ways people worship, the different, you know, what people worship and how they do it and all that sort of thing. So, I do encourage, you know, anybody to branch out and kind of get out of your bubble and get out of your community, to just experience that.
Yeah. I do remember now as you were talking, when I was in college, I had to go on it was called a cross-cultural field experience. It was a mission trip vacation like you do in youth group. And so we went to Philadelphia, and there is a section of Philadelphia that is very heavily Eastern immigrants, people from kind of the areas we're talking about, Philippines, China, places like that. And there was I think it was a Buddhist temple that was in this section of Philadelphia or this suburb. And we were able to just go in. It was very clearly labeled that there were areas that like, okay, if you're a visitor, this is as far as you can go. You can just kind of look around. So that's probably the only one of the few other religions that places of worship that I've been able to visit. I have really wanted to visit a monastery, specifically of some kind of like Catholic branch. For if anything, the architecture and the art.
They're beautiful.
I come from the world of Christianity that prefers their art to look like white Jesus. I grew up Baptist. Our art is white Jesus and VeggieTales, which at least one of those is fine art and the other one is white Jesus. But the for my other podcast, My Seminary Life, I have wanted to do like a whole series exploring worshiping God through various art forms, mm-hmm. you know? And
you should have Grace Jisun Kim on for that one, because she has her book. I don't know if you've read her book yet, When God Became White. Great book, but it talks about the history of how God or Jesus was portrayed as a white person, how when missionaries go into other countries, like a very kind of whitewashed God was presented to them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, her book talks about all that. So she would be a great person to talk about. She actually just came out with a book recently about climate justice and everything like that. So maybe reach out to her and see. She's going to be at Theology Beer Camp, maybe a plug for Trip Fuller or something like that. But if you get a chance, you should come out too. But I'm going to be there in Minnesota this fall. So
right.
Looking forward to that. But yeah, I'm going to try to say hi to Grace Jisun Kim and try to get her on my show if possible, if she has enough time for that. I know she's pretty busy too, but yeah, reach out to her. She might be a good resource for that.
Yeah, we'll just keep the free plugs going for a moment, but it makes sense given what we're doing here today. For those of you who are of the theology / spiritual minded group and you like beer, Trip Fuller of Homebrewed Christianity does this whole big like conference event every year called Theology Beer Camp, and it's supposed to be a melting pot of theology and pop culture. Like the whole thing this year, isn't it Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail? Like that's the theme.
Monty
this year
Python, yeah. Last year was Lord of the Rings. I forget what the year before that one was. This last year was convenient for me because it was pretty close to me. It was, you know, Colorado, but
oh nice.
Be in Minnesota this year, St. Paul actually, and yeah, it'll be Monty Python. So I think it's just kind of the overall Monty Python. Obviously Quest for the Holy Grail and The Life of Brian are going to be pretty big on that, but it should be pretty
that'll
good.
Be interesting. Ooh, throwing The Life of Brian in there, that would be fascinating with that group of guys for sure. So I have officially run out of martial art adjacent beers, but I have a horror.
Should I kind of think of you
here then? Yeah, go ahead. Take one. Go ahead. I have a horror one, and I also have something else entirely, but I think it's a good one to talk about. So, do you want me to do my horror one real quick, or do you want to take a martial art one?
I have a whole list of stuff and I can just run right through it. So if you want to go first, and then I'll just kind of take the reins from here.
Okay. So I have here, this is from Three Floyds Zombie Dust. Three Floyds here in Northwest Indiana is the granddaddy of craft brewing. Back when we used to call it microbreweries. You remember that? Mm-hmm. This is like the OG. And Zombie Dust alongside Gumball Head are the like flagship beers of Three Floyds. Mm-hmm. I got this one. I know you had sent me a picture and it looked like of the beers, all the different beers you had. And it looked like you had a lot of sci-fi beers. And at one point in time, they had one called Space Station Middle Finger. So that was the one I was looking for, but I ended up with Zombie Dust because this is the one exception when it comes to IPAs. This is the one that I will drink and enjoy. I do like Zombie Dust. If you are from out of town and you are visiting Northwest Indiana and you're like, hey, Brandon, take me on the beer run, this is a necessary, here you go, here's the granddaddy of beers out here. The can art for all of their beers is fantastic. I wish I had Gumball Head right here with me because that's probably my favorite one. It's got this like cartoon looking dog maybe on it. It's hard to And it's like smoking a cigarette. It's a lot of great stuff going on there. But like I talked last year in during October with Spooky Season, in the 80s, the marrying of the kung fu and martial art or kung fu and horror movie genre was really big in Hong Kong during the 80s. And obviously, even you can go to the US in the 90s with like the Blade movies as another example of martial art and horror coming together. But movies like Encounters of the Spooky Kind, Mr. Vampire, or one I just came across recently that I think I'm going to do this year for Spooky Season, Kung Fu Fight. What was it? It was Kung Fu from Beyond the Grave. That's what it was called. Oh, just like this, a guy, again, 70s, this guy, his dad dies. The dad comes back as a ghost and is going to teach him Kung Fu to seek revenge or something like that. Just like perfect, goofy horror. I love that, like, lowbrow 70s horror movies. So yeah. Zombie Dust, a must drink if you're in the Northwest Indiana region, and surprisingly a whole lot of horror movies that you could potentially pick from to drink alongside it.
I love that whole idea. Yeah. That's a great little subgenre within the kung fu and the martial arts genre of films, and you'll have to check some of those out, the titles you mentioned.
Yeah.
So I'll bring these over.
Okay.
So I've got a whole bunch of these. One more here. So maybe I'll continue with the whole Christian aspect of Kung Fu. I have one more here. It's called The Reverend.
Okay.
Got a little, there we go. The Reverend.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It's by Avery Brewing Company. It's Belgium style quadruple ale. It's a 10% alcohol. I get all these really high alcohol percentiles. This one was ridiculous. You could definitely taste the whiskey in that one, the whiskey barrel age.
Interesting.
But, I was looking for other ones that would kind of match this whole thing. And I found this one. It was so bad. It was called Transformed. Look it up sometime. You can find the whole movie on YouTube, I'm pretty sure. But it is so bad. It like, I imagine like if like Steven Seagal and what's his name? The Hercules guy. I feel like they would be something. Like if they remade this movie, they would probably be the people in this. But basically, it's
Kevin Sorbo. Is that who you're talking about? Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But it looks like super independent, just an independent filmmaker, just, you know, not a very big budget. So the look of it is very just, you know, low budget. But everything about it, the acting, the story, everything is so bad. Like it has that very cheesy Christian cringe to it. But the whole thing is about like this drug dealer that, They do like kung fu through the whole thing. So I guess you could classify it as a Christian kung fu movie, but it's based in like LA, I think.
Okay.
And so you get this like kind of white, super large white guy that's like this drug dealer, but at the same time, he's like this really great father and he loves his kid. And there's a whole montage of him going to Disney World or Disneyland with his kid. It's so great. It's just so bad. But, and then there's like this preacher, this lady that's a preacher that, is like trying to you know show him the better way of life and everything like that. And obviously by the end he's like you know confessing his things that he's done bad and everything like that and confessing his sins and everything. Super cheesy film, but if you want, you know, it's really bad, something to laugh at and drink with, I'd say Transformed. It came out in 2005. Let's see. And there's actually
if I could interrupt you briefly. So you said that like he's a drug dealer, but a great dad, right?
Yeah. The way the movie does it is just so weird.
was Breaking Bad on the air by this point? Were they trying to do like a Breaking Bad thing?
I think break no
that
no,
might be a little early.
Before, I think this came out a couple of years before Breaking Bad, because Breaking Bad I think came out in 2006, 2007.
Gotcha. Then, okay.
Yeah, this came out in 2005. So I think a couple years before then. Yeah,
and I've never drank. I've never drank while watching a Christian movie, but now that's exclusively when I'm going to drink.
This like, might be that the one you have to start with.
Yeah.
You definitely need drinks to get through this. So you had mentioned there was a game. It was like a Jesus type of game where you're battling like demon Satan, like, you know, Batman and everything like that. All those characters. There's actually one that came out in 2021. It's called Kung Fu Jesus. It has nothing to do with Jesus or religion at all, but it's like a psychedelic thing where you're actually battling like demons, and you're also battling like drug dealers and all this stuff like this. But you're going through all these different like levels of everything. And it's kind of like an open world, or not like an open world set. It's a closed world RPG, kind of like beat 'em up sort of thing. But it's on Steam. It's one of those. The preview actually makes it look kind of fun. So I thought I'd mention that with, you know, if you want to drink something with like a media or something like that, that might be a good one.
Okay.
I do want to bring up this one. Lagunitas. What is it? The Beast of Both Worlds. Coastal IPA. And it's by Lagunitas. I think that's in California, somewhere on the West Coast there. The thing I would actually pair up with that one, there's a movie called Kung Fu Kaiju Film Calamity. It's part of the Wu-Tang collection.
That's awesome.
You can look up the trailer. I think the whole movie's on YouTube. But essentially, these kaiju from outer space come and invade Earth, invade Japan, or invade... Actually, I don't know if it was Japan. I think it was, no, it was Chinese. It was a Chinese film. And there's this, Kung Fu master, this, like super big monk or something like that, that basically like creates a kaiju by, like painting a figurine, and he makes it come to life and grow large to fight these alien kaiju. It is ridiculous. Okay. It looks so ridiculous. I've only seen a small portion of it, but what I've seen, it's pretty out there.
I like the concept.
The concept
doesn't sound really too bad. Yeah.
No, not at all. Let's see another one. Maybe I'll just kind of go through a couple of these that I kind of wanted to.
Sure.
I didn't bring that one down with me. It must be in the fridge. There's a beer that I had actually gotten. What was the name of it here? It was the Galactic Vaquero. It's a Mexican lager. It's by Launchpad Brewery here in Aurora, Colorado. I was actually going to pair up. So there's this movie called my Spanish is awful, but Los Maravillosos Maestros del Kung Fu. It is a Spanish Kung Fu film. So they speak Spanish, but they're acting like they're Chinese. It's really weird, like the concept that they're going for.
Okay.
But it's like a whole kung fu thing. That's another one you have to drink to get through this one. It's pretty out there and pretty bad. So if you're looking for really bad kung fu films, this is another one that would be perfect for that. Perfect. Also just the kung fu show in particular with like David Carradine. I think there was an episode Brujo. But there was a lot of like episodes where they actually dealt with like Hispanic communities and everything like that. So that might actually be a good show to drink like this particular beer with, or some sort of, you know, like a Mexican lager or something like that. I think Seis Manos is a TV show. It's on Netflix. It's an animated show, I think. And that would be another good one to watch if you want kind of that kung fu style, like martial arts, but have that Hispanic kind of vibe to it. Going off that, the Reverend beer, there's a film called The Super Reverend Monk. I figured that I don't think it's actually like Christian, you know, anything like that, but it's more of like, I think reverend is as far as like the word itself, the definition of, you know, like reverence and everything like that. But that might be a good one to watch while drinking that particular beer. And you know, I actually had a question. So, there's a lot of films that have like kung fu or martial arts aspects or elements to them, but the whole movie as a whole isn't like kung fu or martial arts film. You got, you know, films like Equilibrium or Matrix. And I was gonna ask you, would you consider Brotherhood of the Wolf to have elements of that? Because there's a couple scenes in there that where I think it's the Native American character that has some fighting scenes, and some of it's very likened to like a kung fu kind of style or some sort of martial arts style.
Interesting. What was the name of the movie again?
Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Brotherhood of the Wolf. I would have to. I would have to look at that one.
Yeah,
the movie is great. Okay, so
the movie's great. It's a fun movie.
Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, one thing, a term I have started using is martial art media. So that kind of branches out beyond just like the kung fu, ninja, samurai to include movies that maybe they just have really good fights built into them. Because there's a lot of action movies nowadays that like have really good fight sequences, really good choreography in them, even though they're not necessarily kung fu movies. I think a great example of that would be the John Wick movies. Those aren't kung fu movies, but the fighting within them is very good. I don't know, obviously, because I haven't seen this specific movie, what Native American First Nations group is being represented here. But I do know that there has been efforts made, specifically actually in Canada, of all places. Shout out to the Canadian listeners. There has been efforts made to systematize the fighting systems, the fighting styles of different Native American groups into a formal martial art, so that way there's yet another aspect of the culture that can be passed on. I am going to butcher this, so please don't hold it against me, folks. But in Canada, there's one called Akchua, I think that's how you say it, Akchua, which is it dives into the Plains Natives of kind of that. I think it's up in Toronto. So kind of that like Toronto down into our territory. I think that's like Michigan kind of area, kind of that like Great Lakes area of the United States. They're systematizing the fighting style and the weapons that they were used into a technical martial art that you can go train in. So is it kung fu? Is this movie that you're bringing up a kung fu movie? Probably not. But is it a martial art media related thing? I would say yeah, because there is especially efforts being made to recognize this part of a tribal fighting system that has gone neglected and is a way that they can continue to honor their culture and pass down customs. So yeah, I would be interested in checking it out, though. I've never even
heard of that movie. Well, it came out in 2001, so it's been quite a bit since it's come out, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to check that one out for sure.
So I think the last one I would bring up is The Samurai. It's by Great Divide here in Colorado as well. It's a Japanese lager. The one that I would probably pair with that would be, and this one I actually really like, I saw the trailer for it and I actually really want to watch it. It's called Samurai Marathon. So the whole premise is that back in like, I forget how long ago, 200 years ago or something like that, there was samurai. The idea of the samurai was people were losing that aspect of it because there wasn't a need for war, for actually using the skills of samurai and invading countries and defending homeland and all that kind of stuff. So the leader of the country decided to put on a marathon to encourage people to keep their tradition alive. And it would be a marathon. And you have to, you know, go from point A to point B, but you'd have to go through all these obstacles where you have to utilize the skills of a samurai to actually go through it. And So it looks really interesting. It came out in 2019, so not too long ago, about 6 years ago. Oh. So I have to check that one out. And I'd say another one that I would probably pair with that would be the TV show Shogun. I don't know how much like fighting. There's a little bit of fighting in that show, but the show itself was just a phenomenal show. And just to sit down and just sip a beer with it, just soak it all in, it's just a great experience with all that.
I'm glad you brought that one up, because I was very jealous that you can so easily get that one. That's like on the top of my list now. I've never had a Japanese lager. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. I'm talking about the beer.
You're talking about Samurai.
Yeah. I'm talking about Samurai the beer. I really wanted when I Googled martial art beer, ninja beer, kung fu, samurai, that one kept coming up, and I was like, I bet I would really like this beer. Is it good?
Mm-hmm. It's really good. I've had this one multiple times. It's a really solid lager. It's just a really nice one. Good kind of late summer, early fall kind of vibe to it. So,
gotcha.
But year round, it just tastes really good. It's got a good flavor to it. So you were talking about looking up beers. So if you actually get on like the app Untappd, I don't know if you have that app on your phone. But you're able to actually look up specific kind of beers. So I actually looked up specific kind of beers for like various martial art actors, like Chuck Norris, Steven Seagal, all these actors. So if you don't mind, I don't know if you have anything else you want to talk about, but I would just want to run through some of these names that people have named their beers, because some of them are fantastic.
Please do. I've got one more here that I will talk about it, but you go ahead and run that, because I didn't think to do that. So yeah, I really want to know.
So maybe I'll start with just like general kung fu themed beers. So of course you got like kung fu with like kung and then FOO instead of FU. You got kung fu death monkey, and then you got like kung fu hobo, kung fu bar. And then you got interstate kung fu battle, kung fu robot double dragon. How about this one? Smoogie kung fuji. And then other martial arts instead of like kung fu, you got Chai by the Sword, Scotty Karate, Biscotti Karate, got Karate in the Garage, I Know Karate, Voodoo 2, Chainsaw Princess of Karate. And for those fans of Parks and Rec, you got the Johnny Karate Super Awesome Musical Explosion Show.
Holy cow. That one I'll have to figure out how to get my hands on.
I don't know where that one came from. I didn't take enough notes on that. I just put the name down, but it's out there somewhere. So, so looking at the specific themed beers. So I got Chuck Norris. I'll start with that one. So you got Chug Norris. Okay. You got two different breweries that do a Chug Norris. You got Czech Norris. You got two different breweries that do that one. And these are all around the world. It could be like Italy. It could be Switzerland. It could be France. It could be here in America. New Zealand, I think, has some of these. When Jesus and Chuck Norris drew a beer, Chuck Norris's beard. How about Duck Norris? That's by the brewery Dancing Duck, so it makes sense for that one. That's actually two Duck Norrises. There's another brewery that has one. There's Cluck Norris, and then Woodchuck Norris?
That's a good one.
And then you got Bruce Lee themed beers. So you got, of course, Bruce Lee, just the self-named beer. You got Bruce Lehman or Lemon. I don't know if you pronounce it Lemon or Lehman. And you got Bruce Lee 1-inch chest punch. Then you got Bruce Wee Enter the Flagon.
Wow.
I thought that one was pretty good.
That's pretty good.
And then you got... And then you got Steven Seagal. So there's, of course, Steven Seagale. It's an Italian brewery. And then you got Steven Seagal. It's just a different way of pronouncing it. It's a Canadian Quebec one. Then you got Raspberry Birthday, Steven Seagal. There you got Steven Seagal, like a bird. There's four breweries that do a Steven Seagal. Jackie Chan. Yeah. Jackie Chan themed beers. You got Jackie Can and Jackie Chai. And ooh, how about this one? I'm gonna butcher the first word just because it rhymes a little better with the last part of it, but Pokemans and Jackie Chans.
That's awesome.
Wow. Next up is Jean-Claude Van Damme themed beers. So you have
Hell yeah.
You got the Jean-Claude and the Jean-Claude Pardieu. You got the there's a lot of just Jean-Claude Van Damme. Just that's just the name of the beer. There's a bunch of ones that do that. And then you got a bunch of ones that kind of play on the pun of the name. So Jean-Claude Van Dale, Jean-Claude Van Pale Ale, Jean-Claude Van Double. Oh. You got a Jean-Claude Bandana. You got a Jean-Claude Van Cran, Jean-Claude Land Dam, Jean-Claude okay. Van Yam. That's a pumpkin brewery or beer. You got a Jean-Claude ooh. Van Dam. You got a Jean-Claude Van Graham, Jean-Claude Can Slam.
Okay. I would have to assume if I'm making a beer named after Jean-Claude Van Damme, it has to be a Belgian. It has to be a Belgian style. I know you named one that was like a IPA in there, but like I would have to make it a Belgian if I was going to make a Van Damme themed beer.
At least looking at what I took, at least four of these are Belgium style. Some of them are IPAs. I think there is a dark Belgium style. But yeah, there are some Belgians in here.
That makes sense. I love that. I didn't even, like I said, I did go on Google and Untappd and just looked like Kung Fu, martial art, samurai, ninja. I didn't think to go as specific as certain people. Huh. Mm-hmm. I'll have to see if I can. I know I've never seen any of those in the wild before. But man, I'll have to keep my eyes out for some of those. That would be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a bunch of other just random films that I was going to pair with some of these beers. If we do another episode, I can bring some of those up too. Some ridiculous, just very old, like 70s or 80s, Kung Fu films that just, you know, that style of the era and just, you know, you can pair them with some of these, you know, very unique named beers and everything like that. So there's plenty of stuff out
love
there
that.
You know, if you're out there, if you're listening to this and you're like what can I pair with this beer, just Google something and you'll be able to find what might pair with it.
There's a brewery about 2.5 almost 3 hours from me, so I haven't gotten to try it yet, but they have like they have different specific martial arts themed beers. So there's a karate, there's a jiu-jitsu, there's a Krav Maga, even just like all these like very specific martial art themed beers. And I'm like, that is one I'll need to make a necessary road trip at some point. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'll be able to get out there maybe close to this episode and be able to showcase a few of those. I've got one more here that has nothing related directly to martial arts. It is New Holland Brewing, so they're from Michigan. Mm-hmm. Mad Hatter, as in Alice in Wonderland. Mad Hatter. Now, there is still a movie that pairs well with this. Because
recognize the Kung Fu movie.
The one I had thought of, at least offhand, immediately. So Lewis Carroll, whether it was his stories revolving around Alice or The Hunting of the Snark, he deals with the subject of absurdism a lot. This philosophical viewpoint that basically things just happen in life and there's no explanation. Just that is the oversimplification of this philosophical viewpoint. And to me, especially since they said absurdism is a big influence in the film, you got to watch Everything Everywhere All at Once. If you're drinking a beer inspired by absurdism and just like random things happening without like really any explanation, which is not a dig at that movie whatsoever. Everything Everywhere All at Once is the one to watch. I think there is a Netflix show that is supposed to be like a martial arts show inspired by Alice in Wonderland. And I, off the top of my head, I can't think of what it's called. So that would be a good pick as well. But yeah, I would say Everything Everywhere All at Once has to be a movie. If you just want like a bit of a mind trip, that is the movie to watch.
That's a great pick. I love that film. And then to pair it up with like a Mad Hatter beer, that's a great choice. I think that's really good to pick that out. You know, you just make it a whole Frabjous day and just kind of go for it.
Like that. It's if everybody's unbirthday today and we're going to drink Mad Hatter beer and just watch movies Gabberwock, that just,
you know, make it a whole thing.
Right. Make it a whole thing. Just movies that just don't make like sense on the surface. I like those kinds of movies, by the way. Mm-hmm. Those movies that like really movies that like they mess with your head but aren't like heavy-handed about it. I don't like Donnie Darko. I think Donnie Darko is trying too hard to be like a movie that messes with your head, but a movie like Everything Everywhere All at Once or some of the like psychedelic films of the 70s, like that Requiem is for more a dream, of maybe. Requiem for a Dream. The 60s band The Monkees have a movie called Head, and that's another one. So it's just kind of like, where is this going? It's so like weird and kind of artistic, but I really enjoy those kinds of films.
If you want a good kind of just like, where is this film kind of going? My wife and I just finished a movie called Wall to Wall. It's a Korean movie. And it basically talks about how, so there's whole thing where apartment complexes were built really cheap in Korea. And there's just tons of them that have been put up, but they cut a lot of corners. So they didn't put the adequate soundproofing in the walls. So a lot of people living in the residence, they complain about sound that they can hear their neighbors really easily. And like every day they just hear like banging and footsteps and everything like that. So it kind of touches on that subject. And this main character, the protagonist, he kind of goes crazy from all the noises in this apartment complex, and it just kind of spirals out of control. And it's like, where's this movie going? But it's kind of one of those that you know, brings that question aspect of it.
Okay. You said it was called Wall to Wall.
Wall to Wall.
Wall to Wall. Okay. I'll have to look for that one. That does sound like something I would enjoy. Those kind of like psychological films. Those are, yeah, I enjoy those kinds of movies. So those are all the beers that I have. Any final beers you've got over there that you want to highlight?
Let's see. I had one that I haven't talked about yet. The Apex Predator. It's a farmhouse ale / Saison. I haven't tried this one. I've been wanting to. I told my spouse that, you know, she might actually like this one because she likes ales. She'll, you know, if as long as it's the right kind of saison, she's on it. So I might wait and let her have that one. But
sure.
But yeah, I think, and then Titan was another one. So fighting kind of vibe to it, instead of martial arts. Titan, you know, the strong battler sort of thing, the warrior.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think that's all I had really, except for those sci-fi style beers. I have them here, but maybe for another episode, maybe we can talk about like Moonraker and all the sci-fi kung fu films and everything.
Moonraker, that would be a great pick. Yeah, we could do something like that because I think the combat in the movies, the Dune movies, are really interesting. But I wanted to give you, as we start to wrap this happy hour up, man, this would have been like three episodes. I'm looking at the time right now. We're going on like three episodes worth of excitement.
Feel free to
right
cut
now.
Anything. Seriously, you can trim it
down. Oh, no. But I did want to talk circle back to what we talked about, or what I talked about briefly at the beginning of your show, Grub and Grace, and this emphasis on bringing people to the table. I kind of gave my take on it, but to wrap us up, tell us about your heart for bringing people to the table. What does that mean to you?
Bringing people to the table is just such an important piece of who we are as people. I mean, you look at Jesus's ministry and who he was represented in the Bible, and he's a very relational person. You know, he brings people together, and I think people see that and are drawn to that. And we as humans, we have that innate nature to want to belong, to be a part of something, to be connected with other people. And I think that's where the table can really help us, you know, bring all of us together, you know, with different backgrounds, different religious practices and traditions, and bring it all together so that we can, you know, enjoy each other's company, get to know one another, and build those relationships through food and drink at the table. So I think it's just really important to have that. With the podcast in particular, I feel like I've kind of swayed a little bit from that idea. I think that general idea is still there and present when I have conversations with other people. Like, I want to have conversations about that sort of thing, of how we can bring people together. I've gotten a little bit more political within some of my latest episodes over the last half a year, but you know, the idea that I try to keep in the back of my mind is still that, you know, bringing people to the table. There's another podcast that I could even mention too. Maybe you can reach out to him. He might be open to do some of these type of episodes. Andrew Camp on the Biggest Table podcast. And he's over in Arizona, I believe, but he's going to be at Theology Beer Camp this year again. He's another one of those that has that same idea of, you know, bringing people to the table and having those conversations to try to, you know, break through, you know, stigmas and things that might keep us apart, and try to bring that together.
That's awesome. I'm glad that, you guys are doing that kind of work, because I know for myself, as a Christian, kind of like in this quasi pastor kind of role that I'm in, man, sometimes this just feels like it's so much easier to find ways to divide, to say, well, I'm not going to talk to you because I know this, that, and the other thing that you believe. And, you know, sometimes you do have to do that, but just to see people who are trying to follow this example of Jesus and do less table flipping, as it is often highlighted, of like Jesus flipped tables, and more of a like Jesus ate with everybody, who he ate with the sinner. He had Pharisees at the table with him. So I'm glad that you guys are doing that kind of work. And so, yeah,
And that's the thing. Most people think of, I was going to say, like, when most people think of Jesus and table, they think of flipping the table, but the majority of his ministry was about setting the table. And I think that's just such an important aspect that we all miss. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, Mark, I am so thankful that you made time for this episode. I know it was really pulling your arm to make you sit around and talk about beer for almost 2.5 hours, but thank you for making time for this episode. And listeners, if you want to check out Grub and Grace, there will be a link to it in the description of this episode. You can also find links for the Kung Fu Pizza Party Instagram. We're on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza PRTY, so you can get early reviews before the episodes come out. And you can check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. This has been Drunken Fist Happy Hour, and I'm just now realizing I don't have a way to end this episode, because normally I say the 30 minutes or less thing, but I hope you all enjoyed this episode. If you want to hear and see more of this, please drop a comment wherever you found this episode, and I will definitely get more alcoholics together. I'm just kidding. I will definitely get more friends together to have this kind of episode. I loved it. Mark, did you have a good time?
I had a great time.
Awesome. All right, we will see you all in the next episode.